Welcome back to Cargumentative, a show where four men in a studio devoid of any snacks or refreshment are here to talk about all things cars and motoring. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner, and as usual, I'm joined by...
Hi, I'm Mark Paluta.
You're doing it wrong. You did the introduction last week. You can't do the introduction the second time.
So it sounds like you're setting bed linen.
Hi, I'm Mark, and I'm on the podcast.
Good man.
Mike Salomon, and I have a very dry mouth because I've been in a bus that's been leaking fuel the whole day, and I literally think I'm seeing dragons.
Is that why you're moving around on your chair, not speaking directly into the microphone?
No, so seriously, I'm just worried the spiders are coming.
God. Okay. And I'm Nadav, and I'd like to kick things off.
Would you?
If I may.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know this is not part of the plan.
We like you to throw a spanner in the works.
It's because Mark and I mentioned something downstairs in the reception which you hadn't heard of. And now he's quickly being goofy.
He feels like
he's so excited about it.
Oh, that. No, we'll get to that. That's not it.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
I just think our listeners would really benefit. You know, they're interested. You know, they hear us every week. There's more of them every week, our listeners. And they really want to know a little bit more about us. And I think that there's so much sort of... I just wanted to give them a little bit of insight into our friends here in the studio for this week. So number one, I hope that you guys all know that Thomas is a famous TV personality in the last couple of weeks. tell us a little bit more about your great TV escapades. I always thought you had a face for radio, but
apparently not. I've got a body for TV.
Yeah.
Well, is that real?
What? Yeah, it is.
You posted a still shot of Thomas.
Thomas is on TV.
Old ghosts have
actual
come back to
TV.
Haunt me.
Was it The Bachelor?
No, it wasn't The Bachelor. It was Dinner Date South
Africa. Dinner Date South Africa.
Is that like The Bachelor?
It was.
No.
You are on a dating show.
Yes.
Famous.
But it's old now. This was filmed back in 2017.
But the reruns are happening as we speak.
On what channel?
Who did you go on a date with?
Three women.
Actual women.
Actual woman.
So this is the... Hold on. So this is The Bachelor. I've never seen this before.
No, not The Bachelor.
The story was believable until then.
So, I mean, we can be quite proud of our friend Thomas here.
I'm a C-list celebrity now.
He's a C-list celebrity.
Did you actually have to choose one?
Yes. So basically...
Who did you choose?
I chose menus because you get five menus and you have to choose three out of the menus that appeal. So then you get them, you think, I'm going to take these three. And then you don't know who you're getting.
Interesting.
You know? It's like getting a takeout in an empty box. You don't know what's in it, and then you open it up.
Is there no wrapper, so you can't see like what's on the outside?
No, you don't know. Until you get to the house and they open the door and go, ta-da.
So was it fun?
And then you think, yeah, that's why I did it, for fun. I mean, I didn't go out there to try and find true love. Because as we all know, true love doesn't exist.
Did you have any bar chick a while?
No, I didn't have any bar chick a while. I had some Gaviscon.
It kicked off your TV career, though.
It did.
Look at you now.
I know. Famous.
So we're very proud of you, Thomas, but we're less proud of the other two. You know, hardcore car guys, Mark and Mike, you know, they live cars, they breathe cars, everything is about cars. They don't stop about cars.
No.
And yet when you invite them out for a drive on a Sunday morning, it's too early.
Is it too early?
No, but I mean, six is so early.
What are you, a communist?
You know, you get out there, you get your car on the road, you know, you do the things that you tell
your
listeners.
You've got that new car thing
disappointed.
In you at the moment.
I'm just disappointed.
When you have
you
a
guys,
new car, all you want to
so
do is get out and drive
disappointed.
It.
Whatever.
Me and Mark
No, I'll be honest, I actually don't think we could defend this. I think we actually have to take the criticism.
I think Mike was hungover. That's probably why.
He was probably hungover.
No, he got a CrossFit World Championships.
And this was probably
Istanbul. It was a Sunday morning, so it's not often that I'm not hungover. But I'm just saying.
Let's call a spade here. But the point is, I'm just disappointed, guys. You know, you need to practice what you preach. Come on.
So agreed. Yeah.
Get out and drive.
I think this is a segue nicely into Nadav telling us about his new car. Tell us. What is it?
But hold on, this is the biggest
Thomas
news.
Thomas already ruined.
He did. He ruined this.
Yeah, but we need to know detail.
Oh no, wait, hold on. We can't just talk the Porsche everyone knows about. Yeah, there's something that's much more interesting. Yeah. And now, because Thomas has been seriously relegated now to the minority in this group.
That's good. I like to be in the minority.
Oh, whatever.
That's right.
About what's
life.
Happening this coming weekend? No.
No, it's a little bit of an alpha story, and we all...
Is that public knowledge? Because I was sworn into secrecy.
It's amazing, but this happens with Nadav often, you'll find.
What?
That he judges a car by its cover.
No, but you see.
And then he drives it and he goes, oh, wait. I was really wrong.
No.
I'm very disappointed with you, by
so
the way.
So it's coming back. Yeah, all right. Well, let's put it out there. It's coming back to the old argumentative favorite, the Alpha 4C. We gave Mike a very hard time about it for a very long time. And he took it very well.
Did he?
Well, I'm driving it here tonight.
We always said it was flawed.
And it still is.
Nobody disagreed. And we all said that we didn't, you know, we're not sure that it would be a good daily.
It's and not.
No, it
has
isn't.
Lots of
we
issues.
We still admit that.
Very many issues.
We've got one in the family as of last week, and we're very proud of it. And the reason we did that is because it was a good deal.
Rubbish.
And,
it's because it's amazing.
And it's amazing. So the point is it's flawed, but it's exciting. And that's the truth. So everything we've said about the 4C, I think, actually still stands.
It does still
stand. It is flawed. It's not a great car in objective terms. It isn't.
No, it's just...
And yet it's very difficult to forget.
Yeah, so that's the thing about cars. It's sometimes you can't objectify them.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's more to them than that.
Sometimes there's more to it. And
cars aren't for objectifying.
It is.
Hashtag.
Hashtag.
Me too.
although I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but I mean, it's too cliched, but a screw worked its way loose or a bolt worked its way loose in my 4C.
Oh, yes.
Why is that cliched?
What you should be saying is only one bolt worked its way loose. I mean, come on.
But it managed to fall between the aluminium kick plate and the carbon fiber tub. Like, I honestly have never heard anything so rackety
and
in my life. No, I thought I was going to have a heart attack.
So I actually looked into that. And did you know that because of the carbon tub of the Alpha 4C, you're actually supposed to get all your screws tightened about once a year?
Really?
Like an old snare drum on a drum kit?
Yeah.
No, that's ridiculous.
It's part of the service process. They need to retorque everything.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I don't know.
Like it's 1945 again.
Exactly.
No, it's because of the difference in materials. Anyway, talk about some news.
Yeah. Enough
so
of...
allow me to lay you all open to criticism.
That's fine. I like it. To segue from one compromise car to another, Alpine, as we all know.
Alpine
or whatever, man. Mm-hmm. Alpine. Ice cream.
Alpine is a sound system.
It's a sound system.
Alpine.
Don't you have it in your truck?
No.
In your combi?
No, I've got it in the Diablo.
That's what he meant.
I've got it in the Diablo.
Anyway.
Just because a Diablo weighs 3 tons doesn't make it a truck. Okay.
Alpine.
Well, it has active suspension now, so it's less trucky.
Oh, big
Jeez,
news.
That's also big news. Mark made a switch in his car work.
Alpine is releasing at Le Mans this weekend, so a more focused version of the Alpine A110. That's called the Alpine A110S.
Mm. About this as well.
Soon to be followed up by the A110S Black Edition.
No.
So you can actually get this in a matte paint job.
So they're making quite a compromised car even more compromised. So you guys will love it. It'll be harder, rawer, louder, more uncomfortable, and more expensive.
So one of the things that was written about the A110
excellent value
is what good ride quality it has. So now they've gone and ruined that by making it firmer.
How do you know it's got good ride quality?
No, I've read and watched videos.
You didn't drive one
reviewed.
Back in 2005.
Shut up.
And it was a pre-production.
But they have managed to increase the power, but not the torque. Because apparently the new or the double clutch gearbox can't handle additional torque.
Well, then you guys will like that because you have to rev it harder, work it harder.
So you guys blindsided me with this news downstairs just now.
Yeah,
you would know.
I didn't know that there's
avid
a new Alpine
A110 fan.
I apologize for not knowing.
Actually,
I really should.
You're the only person who's sat in one.
I've sat in one.
I refused to. It was too French.
It's there we go. We're watching the Le Mans qualifying at the moment. It's on the screen.
And there's an Alpine
there.
Yeah.
But it's not something. This Alpine A110S that came out is not something I expected. Did anyone really expect them to bring? I thought that was it. The A110.
No,
it
not
wasn't
at all.
Crying out for a special edition. It wasn't crying out for more power. Everyone who drove it loved it. Everyone loved its kind of slightly soft roly-poliness.
So it's
and now it's firmer and it's more powerful.
Has it been
the same thing as all car
manufacturers?
What do you mean, has it sold?
I mean, has it been a decent seller?
Yeah, it's been doing pretty well.
It's a marketing exercise predominantly. They had to reinvent it slightly.
No, it's for people that like Alpha 4Cs.
Yes. The reason I'm asking is that because if it hasn't been a good seller, there's a chance they've got a whole lot of cars left over and they have to do something to spruce it up. And
I don't think so. I thought it was selling according to plan.
But why haven't they brought any to South Africa? Yes. Renault South Africa, please let us know.
Well, I have actively tried to contact Renault South Africa about this, and I've received absolutely no response.
And they make them in right-hand drive?
I contacted them, and they said if there was enough interest shown by the public here...
How do we show interest?
I don't know. Send emails that don't get...
I'm going to call Renault South Africa out on that and say that, okay, how do you show interest then, and how do you record that? Because I tried to show interest, and it was impossible.
I think it would sell. If they can sell Alpha 4Cs, why can't they sell Alpine A110s? Mm-hmm. They did sell them.
I'd rather have an A110.
I would also.
I'd rather have an A110.
It doesn't have a carbon tub.
Yeah.
Good. That means it probably has indicators at work, a decent sound system.
The indicators work fine.
Screws that don't fall off into the abyss.
It's the same about an aluminum car.
And have to be tightened aluminum. Like 5 times a year.
Once a year.
That makes it fun. Okay, what else is in the news?
A completely pointless car is coming out in the next week
or
two.
What is it? Overhyped, overvalued,
8 Series Grand Coupe.
Okay.
Why would you want...
So that's a 4-door 8.
Well, it's a 4-door 8, and you know what? It kind of maybe makes sense. I don't know.
Does it?
It's going off the Panamera.
Well, the 6 Series Grand Coupe is a really good-looking car.
This is the replacement. The 8 is the replacement for the 6. Mm. It's no bigger.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
So in the end, it was kind of inevitable they'd have a Grand Coupe. And the truth is, the 6 Series Grand Coupe was probably the best-looking of lot.
Yeah, agreed.
Didn't they launch like the Grand Coupe, the M8, and the 8 Series Convertible like all within the same week?
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah. The Grand Coupe hasn't come out yet.
Okay,
they're like teaser photographs and things. And like
they can't go a week without releasing a car.
It's amazing.
It actually is amazing like what goes on, because it used to be, like, think about it in the 80s. You'd like have the Merc 1-2-3, and then like eventually, like 12 years later, they the 1-2-4.
There was
quite like that.
Mm. I also like that.
Makes my job easier.
Difficult, yeah.
You guys love these ridiculously compromised, over-the-top, super stroke hypercars, right?
Oh, we love them.
We love them.
So here's one that I actually quite like, and it's the Pininfarina Battista.
That's the electric car.
You can now pre-order one. Do you know how much it costs?
€2 million.
Between 29 million and 36 million rand.
Oh, for how many?
Only 150 will be built.
I think that's
for
each,
one.
Mark. I thought that was like for a dozen.
No, it's not.
At least
a dozen.
And the problem I got with it is actually whilst the 458 and 488 are in pretty shape, I mean, like, you want it to look a little bit...
It looks awesome.
Well, listen, it was a Pininfarina in a design.
But why go...
The Battista.
What makes this particular one appeal to you, Thomas? You're always shouting at us.
It's kind of cool. It's just...
makes it kind of cool?
Because it's just a Pininfarina.
Yeah.
So are many things.
And it's kind of cool. So is the Hyundai Matrix.
Oh, God.
So it's going to be a Ferrari 458 that doesn't sound good, that weighs...
Do you know how fast like this thing is?
It probably weighs a ton more than the other thing.
1,400 kilowatts of power, okay? It'll do 0 to 100 in under 2 seconds. It'll go up to 312 seconds, has a range of 450 km. It's really cool. It's so fast.
How much does it weigh?
I don't know.
No, that's important.
I don't know about cool.
Why?
No, because you know that from an entertainment perspective, you know that if it's heavy, it's not going to be fun.
So it's the same money as the...
In my TV show.
The new McLaren. Gordon Murray T50.
I'd rather have this.
Okay, well, that says everything.
Yeah. Well, there you go, everyone. That's probably...
That sums things up.
It's kind of... There's no really way to continue now.
No. Is there? There's one last shred of news.
Okay.
Actually, there are quite a few things here. But Michelin.
Michelin.
Michelin's bringing out their puncture-proof tyre.
Oui.
The Aptus, which should be...
Beg your pardon?
The Aptus.
Don't you think that this should have happened a long time ago?
How is it puncture... Nadav, are you playing
with
Mark levels?
Instead of being filled with compressed air like regular tyres, the Aptus is connected to the rim via strong but flexible spokes, which fulfill the shock-absorbing role.
Very cool.
So they finally brought it into production.
They've been doing it for years.
But isn't it...
It's going to be on production cars in 2024.
But isn't this the most logical thing that should have happened? Yeah. I mean, if you think about how crude a tire is.
You don't have to inflate it.
Single point of failure.
The wear is always going to be completely smooth and uniform. It's great.
Yeah. And it's like a forklift tire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's finish up the news.
That's it for news. So okay. That is finished up. And we're going to take a break. We'll be back shortly.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in the studio today, I brought my iPad in, and we've all been watching it. We just can't keep our eyes away from Le Mans qualifying.
Yep.
And Le Mans, in case you guys who are tuned in don't know, is probably the world's most famous motor race. Goes on for 24 hours, as the name alludes. And when it comes around every year, car guys seem to go crazy about it.
Well, think about it. It's a car going as fast as it can for 24 hours.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And not braking.
I mean, yeah. I think if you go back to the history, the beginning of motorsport, this was the biggest test for a motor manufacturer to prove that their car could go 24 hours. And back in the, what iteration is this? Must be close.
This is the 87th.
I mean, back in those days, you know, driving around pretty much the same area, at least.
Yeah,
the same
pretty
area.
Much it is, yeah.
Those cars and the French cars, the Peugeots, and then got to the era of the Bentley boys and things like that.
And the Japanese.
Yeah, and you know, that's not even getting towards the 70s, which was probably the golden era of motor racing.
Yeah,
period.
Definitely.
Other thing that it's interesting, Mark, and you do this quite a bit, is you drive your cars daily. People think that sports cars and supercars are these delicate things that shouldn't be taken out and shouldn't be used, but this proves that these things are actually so well engineered and so tough. Look, they're special race cars, but you've proven it with the way you use your cars every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're always better for it.
But I mean, I think that, you know, one thing using it daily, it's another thing to go for 24 hours. And I think that what Tom's just said about just how hard these guys go for 24 hours. They don't just poodle around. They are properly racing as hard as these things can go.
But it's the 87th running of the race this year, like we said, and that maybe is one thing that has changed. So over the years, it was a battle between the competitors, but the endurance came first. Yeah. In other words, you know, the whole thing of, in order to finish first you have to finish. And that's always rung true, but you used to have to pace yourself.
Exactly. You couldn't just go flat out
because the cars wouldn't last. So they didn't do that. But as the years have progressed and engineering has improved over the years and the cars have become more and more robust, it's actually changed into what is effectively a 24-hour flat-out sprint.
Oh, they flat-out.
It is
absolutely
unbelievable. Yeah. So years ago, that wasn't the reality.
How long ago do you think that changed?
I'd say probably
20 years ago?
Yeah.
Like late 90s into the 2000s?
Oh, I don't know. I think in the 70s the guys were already going absolutely.
No,
I
don't think 70s.
In other words, were they driving then?
What? In the 70s?
Yeah. 917s.
They were going flat out, guaranteed.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
911s were going flat out.
911s were going flat out.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So anyway, so the point is that, you know, as they call it, the crucible of motorsport, where, you know, you prove your wares to your customers on the circuit. You show them that your car can do this. And if it can do this, then it can withstand anything on the road. And
we know that 930, it's 79.
It was a 75. It was the 75. Geneva Motor Show car, and it actually ended up winning.
So what was the story behind it? It went through like how many sets of brakes?
So it's an interesting thing. So it's owned by a friend of mine currently in Switzerland. The story goes that it was the Earls Court Motor Show car. The Geneva Motor Show car. So it's one of the very first 930s that was made. It was a 3-liter. And there was a customer who was looking to go to Le Mans, and there's something around that the RSR that he wanted wasn't available. So they said to him, why don't you drive this car? And it was the only turbo in the field. It turns out, so what they did was they put an exhaust on it, and they changed the seats and things like that, added on the rally lamps, well, the lights for night driving. And the car ended up, the long story short is that it actually ended up winning the race, but like as Mark was saying, in its class. And it ran out of brakes during the race, and they took the brakes off a 911 that was parked in the parking lot, and they changed it for that. And I mean, it's an amazing thing that
But they never touched the motor.
No,
even until recently.
And my friend is busy getting his FIA license, and that car will hopefully be competing in the Le Mans Historic.
Wow. So why do we? So we haven't answered the question. Why does it make us so excited?
Well, hold on. Can I just ask the question to Mark? So what's it really like to be at the circuit during the race?
Well, it's amazing. The vibe is
there's
amazing.
Nothing like Le Mans. The vibe like there.
Oh, sorry. You're the only one of us who hasn't been there.
Have you got your beep button handy, Mark? Go off. I'm the only one who hasn't been. Yeah.
So I think. Yeah. I mean, to get back to the question, why does Le Mans appeal? And I think for me, one of the big things about it is that it's motorsport which has cars which you can relate to, especially in the GT car. So they're actual cars that you might be able to see on a breakfast run or in a magazine or in a showroom. So I mean, there are Porsche 911s, there are Ferraris, there are Astons, there are Corvettes.
The Corvette is the most vulgar of the field.
GT40,
and that is cool because unlike, you know, Formula One, where they're basically just, you know, these.
But I think that you're looking at it and saying, yes, you can relate to the cars because they're things. But not only that, you can also relate to some of the drivers, because there's an LMP, which is Le Mans prototypes. There's an LMP1, which at the moment is a bit of a farce because there's only the Toyotas that are really competing. There are a couple of others in there.
You've got the privateers,
but then you've got the LMP2, which is a nicely contested class, and it's really cool.
Which nobody really cares about.
And those are single seater carbon fiber tubs. They're actually much faster in a straight line than a Formula
LMP
One car
because they're Le Mans professional.
Yeah. No, Le Mans prototype.
Le Mans prototype. Then what you've got is you've got the GTEs, which is the ground. And you've got the GTE Pro.
Pro class,
which is a professional driver.
Yeah. And then you've got the GTE Amateurs, which is what Patrick Dempsey
drives.
And the cool thing about the GTE Amateur is that ostensibly, if you had enough money,
it could be you,
and you were reasonably fast, you could go and do it.
Exactly, because you've got to have one gentleman driver.
That's what they actually call them, gentleman drivers.
In an AM car. Yeah. And a lot of those guys have got, you know, big businesses, they're very successful, they've got the ammo behind them to actually get up there.
So wait, they have to have one amateur driver and the rest can be professional?
I think so. That's what makes AM is you have to have one gentleman amateur driver.
Okay. Cool.
I want to ask a question to the thing. If you could have one bucket list motoring thing, would it not be to race at Le Mans?
Oh yeah, definitely.
For me, I mean it would be.
I mean, I'd need quite a bit of sleep, but yeah.
Why would you sleep?
Because he yawns so much.
It's long, man.
Give Mark a break. He hasn't been. He doesn't really know how to race.
Think about the task that you have to do. How long are the driver stints? 3-4 hours?
2 hours. No, they normally do an hour at a time. No. They do an hour at a time normally.
Well, I think a stint is like 45 minutes.
Okay, so it's not that bad.
But they do double stints.
Yeah. Or even triple stones.
Well, you just got Mark. You just said doo-doo. So he thinks he's going to have a nice little sleep. let's tell the guys about what it is like to go to the race. I mean, so let's bring up a little bit
Mark,
of an anecdote.
Maybe?
No. Yeah. So.
Oh no.
So because the beat button. F*** off.
So for me, I mean, I'm not a very like emotional guy, but you know, when I got to Le Mans,
you ever cry?
Yeah, it's maybe.
It's just a racetrack,
that's fine,
man.
No, it's not, because it's quite cool, because you're standing there at Indianapolis, which is one of the famous corners, and it's dark, and you got all these cars lapping, and you can hear them coming through the forest, and it's a circuit that has such a great history. I mean, you know, we've all seen the Steve McQueen movie. Paul Newman was there. I mean, it's seen a lot of interesting people, amazing cars. It's seen victories, tragedies. It's just one of those incredibly emotional circuits to go to.
So, I mean, I could talk for hours about my experience there, and it was the single best event that I've ever been to, and it's certainly not just the race. You know, you get there on the Wednesday or the Thursday, and there are car shows all over the place, and the place, it's just, you know, you go for a croissant and a cappuccino in the in the village at Arnage, which is one of the corners, and it's an interesting just segue here, is that how many of the corners can you name?
Indianapolis, Arnage,
Tête Rouge,
Porsche Curves, Ford Chicane,
Indianapolis.
I said that.
Guys, I also want to just talk about, so what I did was, did you guys camp at the circuit?
So the first time I ever went to Le Mans, I camped out, and that was really cool because you get to meet these people, and people come with like cool cars, and everybody's just out there having a couple of beers and brying, and you know, it's like quite a social, like fun thing to do.
I've actually got, I'm just looking at my photos on my Instagram. I mean, there's just too much to talk about. I mean, there were some guys that they had a 500-pound challenge. They had to buy a car, paint it up using like proper paint. Like what you'd paint a house with.
Yeah, like Plascon wall and all.
Plascon wall and all. And they do up the car.
Plascon wall and all.
And they did it. What I've actually got here is I just want to call up. I've got a video of the start. And if you'll indulge me, I just want you to... can I play it?
Proper.
So, like that moment, watching the guys go across the line, and then the racing starts, and watching the drama unfold. We watched the Toyotas. I remember at midnight, within about half an hour, both of them broke down.
Crashed.
There was one left, and the Porsches went on to win. So we watched the overall Porsche win. It was the last time that they won at Le Mans. But as I say, just what an experience.
Yeah.
I went to Le Mans, I think it was 2015. I went alone. Nobody wanted to join me. Whatever. It was a fantastic trip.
Yeah, you're not bitter or anything.
I'm not bitter or anything. I did camp there. It was a hell of an experience, and it's a hell of a motor race. And to see cars that you, like we said, you can relate to, you can potentially strive towards maybe buying one day in your life. Absolutely on it. For 24 hours. I mean, it is just, it's so long.
Yeah.
I mean, to see cars doing what they do at full race pace for 24 hours, it's unrelenting, and it's just unbelievably hard on these cars. And the fact that they make it through it all, just, it's amazing in itself. My strongest memory of the race was I took one of the buses. It's such a massive circuit.
Huge.
You actually have to bus around it. I took one of the buses down to Arnage. This was sort of around, I would say around midnight on the Saturday night, so around the middle of the night. And standing in Arnage, it's an interesting corner because they break down from about 220, 250 k's an hour to about the lowest speed on the circuit, which is because they've got to take a right hand effectively at Arnage. And then they accelerate away from you. And that year was the year of the diesel Audis. I think they were the R10 or e-trons, something like that. I stand to be corrected. And a lot of diesel cars and the LMP1 cars coming past, and you get to see their weight transfer as they break into Arnage, down from 200 something clicks down to sort of 60-80 k's an hour. The brake discs glow, and then they turn the corner and they disappear. And the only way that I can really describe is when if you've ever watched Star Trek, and they have that thing where the Starship Enterprise jumps into warp speed.
Yeah.
I swear that is what something accelerating out of our knowledge looks like. It is unbelievable. It disappears from you.
And it sounds kind of similar too. I remember with those diesels, they had like that unique low frequency whooshing.
It just disappears into the acceleration is I'm unable to relate it to anybody. You have to see it.
So I had a similar thing, and for me it was sitting at the Porsche curves at about 10 o'clock. Sun was had just like gone down, but it was still sort of light, and watching those brake discs glow and watching them carry the speed through there, and it was just unbelievable to watch. From a spectator's perspective, also just to note that it's actually quite easy to know what's going on in the race. So the GTE Pro cars have yellow lights, and the amateurs, I think, have white lights. Headlights.
Really?
On the sides of the cars, they have three LEDs. And in each class, the leader will have one LED lit, the second two, and the third three. So you can see who's in what place. And it's actually, without even looking at the screens, and they're plentiful, you can see really what's going on the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And there's a 24-hour radio broadcast that you can tune into.
Radio Le Mans, as
well.
Yeah.
And, so it's really easy to know what's going on and move around. What an experience. Yeah. And to watch, still just watching it on TV these days brings back all those memories, and it's a hell of a thing.
And again, the great thing about it is it has all these, you know, I mean, you've got midnight, you've got dawn, you've got, you know, so you've got all these nuances.
And different challenges for the drivers, you know.
And that's quite cool.
As the light changes and the conditions change. Over a whole day, you can have cold, hot,
pouring rain,
dry.
Thankfully, we didn't have any rain. Yeah. We were camping, but it's a mad thing. In the middle of summer, it was really hot during the day, but at night, it gets cold.
Mm,
but
it was cold.
Thankfully, there are loads of bars.
Loads of bars.
And we even found a nightclub that was in a car wash in the middle of the circuit.
Okay, that's interesting.
What I do recommend as well is the museum there. During the race to go and see it. You actually have to see it. I mean, they've got cars in there which are just blow your mind.
You actually have to go to Le Mans many times to pick up on all the nuances and bits and pieces that, you know. Mm.
Fortunately, we went with someone who booked everything for us, and they teased him. They said that he's been to them all, so he knew exactly what to go. And he would tell us where all the events were and all that type of thing. But it just, I must admit, I've got an idea. I've actually got a bit of an idea. Yeah. Why don't we have a Le Mans party at the Cave on Saturday?
Oh, that's a great idea. I'm sorry I didn't come up with it.
Done. We're meeting at the Cave at 2:30 to
watch the
start.
Will you let me know when you finish talking about Le Mans? So
we will. I think we're done with Le Mans.
Well, I think we should all encourage Mark to go next year. 2020 Mark at Le Mans. What do you say?
Done.
Do it. I'll join you. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Fine.
Happy.
Paige, can you get us press prices?
You want to be shouted at again?
Yeah, again.
Okay.
Yes. Cool. Guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with you again shortly.
Young people are making their mark. Get up!
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
Welcome back to Cargumentative.
What are we talking about now?
We're going to have a little rant. And it's a rant that's kind of been brewing for a long time.
So can I start?
Yeah, you can.
So the other day I'm driving on the M1 to work.
Yeah.
And I stop behind some cars on the off-ramp.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, I'm behind a 30-cylinder Audi A3.
Yeah.
It must be 30 cylinders. It said 3.0 TFSI, right? So what else could it be?
30.
It can't be 30 litres. That would be ridiculous. It's got to be 30 cylinders.
I thought it was 30 litres per 100 k's?
Yeah, I thought it was a fuel economy.
30-seater?
That's big.
Not 30-seater.
Maybe it's a 30-seater A3. Yeah.
Maybe it weighs something.
It's a boot capacity. 30 cubic metres.
Maybe, yeah.
Centimetres.
So basically...
That is just the most confusing...
But do you think it's really something to get upset about?
Very.
Yes,
definitely.
It's ridiculous. Because
they don't know what they're driving.
This is why we have a whole rant segment about it. It's definitely upsetting.
Do you get like a
20-liter one.
Okay. Does anybody know? Well, okay. Does anybody know what these numbers refer to?
Of course not. No one knows.
Audi doesn't either. I don't think.
I did.
Okay. Yeah.
I did some research.
You did.
I did some research.
Tell us.
I did. So if you see a 30 prefix, because it's always before, it'll say 30, TFSI.
Uh-huh.
Okay. 30 means it's a reference to power. So 30 could be anything between 81 and 96 kilowatts.
Oh, obviously, because 31.
That's so obvious.
30 means 81 or 91.
I mean, why didn't you just say so?
Yeah. So if you move it to 45, it could be anything between 169 to 185 kilowatts. And so it goes. You've got this whole thing like
169 to 185 is what? 65?
45. 55 is 245 to 275 kilowatts.
What? Who came up with this?
When
and
I was
why?
Doing maths at school, we never could. 45 could never equal 165.
Maybe it's a horsepower thing. Maybe it's a.
It's not. They should have just called it the phase one and the phase two.
Yeah. I mean, how
why
do you even
give
get
it
to
a
this?
Number?
The thing about it,
it's ridiculous.
So context to the rant is that Audi has recently reintroduced a new kind of nomenclature. A way of defining the
nomenclature. Let me just get my encyclopedia.
Can you say that again?
Nomenclature.
I love the way it rolls.
I don't know if it does, but the point is that the signs on the back of the cars, they changed the whole system. So it used to say, I don't know,
it used to say
1.4 TFSI.
Yeah,
you
or know that 2 liter T.
You knew that was a 1.4 liter car.
And then it was a TFSI, so you knew it was a turbo.
Turbo. Yeah.
So you could take it from there. Fine.
Or it was a TDI.
Now. It makes no sense. They have arbitrary numbers relating to other arbitrary numbers, so it doesn't make sense to anybody. So that's the rant.
It is totally ridiculous. It's like, I'm just going to take out my phone and do, 45, that means it's like going to the Kruger National Park and bird spotting and saying, that's got Rufus undercarriage, so it must be this bird. So this is a 45, so it could be anything between 169 and 185 kilowatts.
So which is it? You'll never know.
You'll never know. So I think what we're saying is that we look back fondly at a day where you could look at the sign on the back of a car and know exactly what was going on under the bonnet.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I think this is the most ridiculous rant I've ever heard.
About old traffic signs and robots.
No, but this is because people can die. People can die. No, but hold on a second. It does bring up something interesting, though. So back in the day, let's look at the Merc thing. So if you had a Merc 200, it was like
a 2 liter.
But you knew that was the shame, man. Here and he's got that. It's the carb fed one. But then if you had a 230e,
You're starting at 2.3,
but it's injected at Einsprung, yes, and now things. And then, but if you had a 280. Now that was
a lovely car.
280.
Now I'm saying like the badge engineering. So like. To the enthusiast, you would know that it had a bigger engine, but ultimately, and particularly the worst of all, were the BMW guys. So you'd have a 325, and you had a 325. That was the car. You know what I'm saying? And like, you know, 525.
Yeah,
because
it meant
something. Little 525.
Yeah,
and
but
it had
that's
the
fine.
Hubcaps.
But, yeah,
but I'm just saying, like, I'm just wondering
that.
Now. But I'm wondering there's a point to why I'm saying this. Is that these
I'm
numbers,
sure
irrespective of the number that's there, is it still around that if you've got a 30, you're cool, but if you've got like a 100, you're just
but
amazing.
But no one knows
now.
Where the numbers
well,
start
no
or
context.
Finish. That's exactly it. If I see a 30
TFSI,
yeah, but
a 30 in the middle or is 30 the
know.
Entry level?
You know, who knows?
Because 30 is higher than 20. Is there 20?
No, there's no. It starts at 30.
Why does it start at 30?
I don't know. It's ridiculous.
No, but here's my question. It's like, I mean, you must be able to look at the range. What's the biggest number they got?
70.
Okay, 70.
400 plus. But RS 70. Cars don't have numbers.
Yes.
Oh.
So that makes it even more confusing.
No, so it's a 30. No, but let's assume it's an A3. What's the biggest number you can have on an A3?
Going on what
you
I'm seeing
know.
Here.
You wouldn't
45,
know.
Probably a 45.
Okay, so 45. But is a 45 cool?
No.
Why?
You see, the difference is that it used to relate directly to something.
Mark.
It used to relate to the engine size.
They've taken away any ability to know what it is.
What it is.
No, but I'm saying, but what's their intention? Is it that people
I know
start
what it is.
Getting
to confuse
to know?
People?
No, but can I tell you what
no
it is?
No one's going to know. Try it.
The reason they brought it out is because they have cars that are now combining hybrid power or electric power and petrol or diesel power. So they're hybrid. So you can have a 1.4-liter petrol engine. But you've also got this electric engine or motor, which boosts the power. And they had no way of
quantifying that on the back.
No, but okay, let me ask the question differently. Is the number still a status thing on the car?
No. I mean,
is it something that's relevant on any of the cars?
Well, it doesn't anymore. They've made it that way.
It's like going
on any of the cars. Now, I wonder if it, from a manufacturer's perspective, whether they're intending it to have some kind of...
Well, BMW have also lost the plot because they've got a 316, which has a 2-litre four-cylinder turbo engine, a 318, a 320, and a 328. All of the same size engine.
And then Mercedes as well.
Yeah, I've also done that.
But listen, can I read to you guys what the powers that be at Audi said about this whole thing? Okay.
What did they say?
I was going to put on a German accent, but that's just going to be lame, so I'm going to speak.
What? No. Do it!
As alternative drive technologies become increasingly relevant, engine displacement as a performance attribute is becoming less important to our customers. The clarity and logic of structuring the designations according to power output makes it possible to distinguish between the various performance levels.
That's fine. I get that logic. I understand that a 1.4 these days, you know, is not necessarily the 1.4 of 1992. You know, it's a turbo, and maybe it's turbo and supercharged, and maybe it's hybrid assist. And instead of some producing something like 60 kilowatts, it now produces 160. That's fine. I understand the need to maybe change something where the capacity of the engine doesn't mean anything anymore.
It should be power output now.
Yeah, it should be power.
But then, then why not make it the Audi A3
200,
110?
Because it makes 110.
Exactly.
You know, or equivalent to 110 because it comes from different...
What car manufacturer has done that? Someone's done that.
Yeah, somebody did do that.
That made a lot of sense.
No, normally the
Renault
normally does.
And 275
and Ford. Remember, you got the ST220 and the ST150.
Oh, that makes reasonable.
That works.
That does make sense.
So I'll tell you, I rented an A330 TFSI the other day, and you know we were kind of in a rush.
We went away. Plettenberg Bay,
beach house.
To the beach house. So
you sent us a few photos of you. You look amazing in a Speedo.
Thank you. I shaved especially for you. So.
And he was in a Bacuzzi.
And it's not like we didn't appreciate your shaving.
So, I mean, we were in a hurry. We hopped into this car. I saw this badge on the back. It meant absolutely nothing to me. The truth is, we did another 120 Ks that day, and it wasn't clear to me what I was driving. So I actually had to Google it that evening to say, all right, well, this is what I have. What's under the bonnet? Turns out...
Was it clear, though?
No. It wasn't even clear from driving it what it was, okay?
No, but once you Googled it...
It's a range, but the 30 TFSI, turns out it's a 1-litre, 3-cylinder turbo, producing under 100 kilowatts.
Oh, it's a cool engine, but they should have called it that.
But you know, but I think that what we can conclude now is that badges don't mean anything to anyone anymore.
But that
Whereas
sucks.
They
that
used
sucks.
To, yeah,
to car people who actually we're not looking at it from a prestige perspective. No. We want to know if we can keep up with that thing. Or
it's
not.
A logical thing. Like, I mean, even as a kid, I knew that a 318 was a 1.8.
Try explain that to our kids.
And
look, kids, there's a 30. Oh, Dad, what does that mean?
I don't know what that means. But there was such a pleasure. There was so much pleasure to be derived from a BMW driving past you, like an E34, and looking at the back and saying, "Oh, that's a 525," or "That's a 540i."
Yeah,
you
know? That's fast because I know that's a
V8 4-liter. Yeah. You know, that's a big deal. You know, there's so much pleasure to be derived with when it means something direct.
Yeah. And then when you know it's a 4-liter V8, you're going to listen out for that V8.
Absolutely, and there's absolutely no doubt about what a 530d is.
But this thing drives past you don't know what it is. Is it the fast one? Is it the top one? Is it the bottom one? Is it the middle one?
I totally agree with
something
you.
To look
so
at?
What Audi have done is what we knew they were going to do is they've made their cars appliances.
You know what Audi should actually do with this whole thing is put a big QR code on the back of the thing. So when you're driving along,
what is that?
You can say, check. The whole rear window should be a QR code.
And then you can get your millennial daughter who's sitting in the driver's seat and it's a nice like parent daughter engagement time where she can QR code everything and it'll tell you exactly.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. They should just put a serial number at the back.
I think it's a great idea. QR codes on the car. There you
go. I mean, this goes back to, you know, in Germany when we were there last year, everyone debadges their cars.
Yeah.
It just says A6. Well, you know what? It's starting to make a lot of sense because, you know, the badge doesn't make any sense at all.
No, anyway, it's Dorf.
Sorry, guys.
I hope no one else follows suit, but anyway, they probably will.
It makes our job as car people, it makes our job that much more difficult. Not fair.
Yeah. Is that it for ranting and raving?
Yeah.
I think it's enough.
Mark doesn't
care. It's probably enough for that. But I'm just looking at the 530D badge upside down.
Oh, God.
Jeez. You know what you must do? ADD's kicking in.
when Mike goes to Lord's next week, whenever it is. When
he's flicking tiles at his
When you're in the dressing room and Fuff is walking out of the shower and there's just steam everywhere and you've been like flicking people with tiles and stuff, you can show them all that. And have a big hearty jock
laugh. Laugh together. Jokes, remember this.
Funny, eh?
You'll slap on the back.
This Oak's a character.
Have a good game. This Oak's such a character. Guys, thanks for having us, Thomas.
It's on your pleasure.
Good luck for Le Mans this weekend.
Good luck. Good luck. I'm going to see if I can drink 24 Vintook Lights in 24 hours.
Oh, we're doing the 24-hour tequila challenge.
Well, you're going to be more hungover than I am.
Why? No, tequila, you don't get hungover.
Why?
Why?
One tequila for 24 hours. Who can't do
it's
that?
It's like a bottle in 24 hours. It's nothing.
Nothing.
What's the worst case scenario? Exactly. Yeah. You get hungover.
You don't get hungover.
I just want to know who's bringing the Quaaludes.
The
Dove.
2 hours.
Yeah.
See what I can do.
All right, guys.
You said it. Okay, cool. Thanks, Thomas.
We'll all enjoy our respective Lamar parties and we'll regroup.
Are you in not
2 weeks'
time.
Remember.
In 2 weeks' time. That's right. We're not here next week.
Subscribe.
Yeah, hit subscribe.
Hit the bell.
Tell your friends and family to do it as well.
And to view us and stuff on Instagram at Cargumentative.
Mm.
And at our own pages, I'm at Palutsky.
Thomas. I don't know what I'm at. I'm either at Tom Faulkner 111 or Thomas Faulkner 111.
No, look for the Falcon.
The Falcon. Cats, you'll birds, and cars.
Cats, birds, and some cars.
Yeah.
I'm at MH Salomon.
And I'm at NBR_911. And we're gonna make a concerted effort to post some more stuff on the Cargumentative account.
We are.
Interact with us, tell us what you think, and respond to our questions.
Yeah, tell us what segments you like.
Yeah, we want
and
to
ask
know.
Us, we like to give advice.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So to ask we us what advice. Kind of cars you should buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love advice. We won't pretend that we're right.
Anything, even if it's not car related, we'll answer it.
Yeah, yeah, try. But we like fighting over it.
Maybe ask us which model of Audi A3 we should buy.
Yeah.
Or not. Don't.
The 30 cylinder one.
Awful. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time for another episode of. Argumentative.
Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.